Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.13. You glutton for punishment, you. Well, I don't know how to start this podcast. Usually I do something to harass or annoy you, but I'm very tired.
Yeah. I'm also not sure how much I'm capable of being annoyed at this point beyond just...
your base level.
Yeah, the level I'm at.
Yeah. So Michigan loses 31-20. That was it?
That was indeed the final.
The good news is that missed extra point is not... coming back to haunt us.
It will not be a legendary
thing.
For
the rest of time.
Yeah.
And...
thus ends most of the... Well... good, I mean, no, that's not actually how I feel.
That was a very Brady Hoke well, by the way.
Yeah.
Well... Let's just bring him up for no reason.
Good start.
Well, I mean...
okay.
All right.
So...
Well, John O'Korn's on the field, and he breaks down in the press the press conference afterwards. says he blames himself for this loss, and it's the worst feeling in the whole world. And I sympathize with him.
Yes,
I also think he is correct.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan wins that game with passable quarterback play, and O'Korn was below that line.
So far, below it.
But man, like after hearing that presser yesterday, I just like...
Yeah, I mean, I had to shut off the comments on the blog because I already banned a dozen people for saying various awful things about John O'Korn.
Yeah.
And then one guy was so mad about that, he signed up on Twitter just to call me a fat, unfunny Seth Rogen. And I was like, well, first of all...
that's a redundant statement.
We can just dispense with the modifiers there. And then I blocked him.
So that was how yesterday went for us.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
Mostly I just shut off the comments because I didn't want to have to like pay attention to it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there were people saying some pretty terrible things to other commenters, too, that were just like, unless we were all going to dedicate ourselves to combing through every comment yesterday,
right?
The right thing to do was just lock it down.
And like a lot of people were like, thank God, never bring them back.
there were a lot of...
That can't happen.
No.
We gotta get a hold of some of the subversive elements.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know if that's right. But anyway, John O'Korn caused an internet... shitstorm because his quarterback play was very, very bad.
Yes.
And I write down notes about like the things I want to talk about, the things I remember from the game. And like half of this is just boggling misses that O'Korn had. Like there was a screen that was wide open that was set up.
Yes.
And he missed that. There was the fourth down miss to Chris Evans on a wide open, awesome RPS play.
There was the play where he rolls out and takes a sack when Donovan Peoples-Jones is wide open.
Oh, my God, yes.
Like, right in front of his face. And like, there was also a receiver downfield who was screamingly wide open.
Yeah, and, like, Peoples-Jones has to be the primary read on that. And
yeah, because, like, it's a roll right to him.
And that play was right in front of my face.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm on about the 40, and that was coming right at me. And I'm just like, throw the ball, throw the ball, throw the ball. I deleted a couple of the words I said just then.
I believe you.
And, I had many of the same feelings people had about O'Korn in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, the key is to not say those things out loud.
Or at least don't say them in a place that it's recorded.
Yeah, that too, most definitely.
Whether it's on the internet or... but yeah, there were a couple times when I couldn't control my heaving emotions and I screamed something like, ah!
Yeah.
To the section at large.
Sure.
But... you know, an hour later, you got to be
a human.
You know,
something approximate.
I'll take. I mean, like, and there were some old players who were kind of going in on them. Like Doug Skeen had the tweet that was as bad or worse than the Braylon stuff everybody dragged Braylon about like last week. where he's like, you know, better be someone else impersonating a quarterback in the bowl game. And I'm like, wow.
Come on, man.
Wow. So, yeah, that kind of day from not only the peons, but former players. And I'm just, it's not great.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Speaking of not great, all the companies that aren't our sponsors, but here are the list of good companies, the only list, the only good companies. Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the Residence Inn in Ann Arbor downtown, where we are taping right now with its 10 conference rooms. It's still 10, right?
I think so.
Homeshare Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. So, back to the boggling list of corn misses that I've written down.
Assembled here.
God. And then, of course, the last.
The interception. Where Crawford makes the right read and sits down and Okorn.
I think it was. Was it Gentry or was it Crawford that. I don't know.
It was one of them.
One of the
there might have been multiple open, but no, I think it was Crawford who was the option route guy on that one, and he sits down.
Which is an interesting insight into the workings of Michigan's offense.
Yes.
Because we probably suspected, but we weren't sure that they were running a bunch of option routes. They are.
Yeah. So that might help explain some of the struggles this year, because that's an added dimension that is difficult on receivers and also on quarterbacks who don't know what they're looking at. But so Korn reads it wrong and fires it deep.
Jordan
Fuller basically fair catches it.
Yep. Oh, just mind blowing. And I mean, I guess the good news is that the game plan here was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, they were popping receivers wide open all over the place.
Yeah, they picked up a huge tunnel screen based on motion that worked well because. The motion that Crawford has, so there's a guy trailing him.
Mm-hmm.
That guy has to stop and come back with Crawford, so he's not able to, like... They got themselves a little bit more room to get that guy blocked. They get it blocked, and they rip it off for 50 yards. They had a third and 12 conversion where Chris Evans just kind of goes in motion, and then he's got a man guy in a trail spot. And that got him only about 7 yards, but it was near the goal line, and Evans got the rest of it.
Yeah, just spun through somebody.
Yeah, and he looked awesome.
Yeah, Evans is excellent.
Like, people were complaining about him early in the season, and we were trying to be like, his blocking has just been...
Like, seriously, the worst blocking luck since frickin' Fitz Toussaint.
Yeah. And now that we kind of see him in space a lot, on the edge a lot, he's been able to display that kind of jitterbug stuff that he was teasing as a freshman.
And he's added a little bit of a power element. I mean, it's kind of a, like... Juky power element,
right?
Where
like,
it's making sure nobody can hit you square, but that he's very capable of doing that.
Well, I mean, running through tackles is running through tackles, and you can do it like Devion Smith did it, or you can do it like Evans does it.
Yeah,
and
the way Evans does it is more conducive to big plays. That's
yes,
for sure.
That's definitely big plays, but he's also not going to be as consistent at grinding out 2-3 after contact.
Sure, yeah.
So there are trade-offs there, but in this game, I thought he was awesome. Like, he was able to get on the edge against some of the best athletes in the country, outrun guys. He was able to juke and spin his way into extra chunks of yards. Like, he really kind of emerged into the starting tailback kind of mid-game, I think, where they were probably planning to go with Higdon and Evans maybe as an equal rotation or even leaning towards Higdon, but Evans was playing so well that they went with the hot hand, and he was a major reason that Michigan managed to put up 20 points.
Yeah, absolutely. The added dimension he brings as a receiver, I think, also helps separate him from Higdon a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to... I mean, like, name a receiver, and we're going to have one of those moments, I think. Yeah. But, I mean,
downs.
You know, Evans catches 5 balls in this game. No other Michigan player got more than 2.
Yeah, I mean...
He was their most reliable outlet.
They finally paid off all that talk.
Our preseason.
Amazing.
Discussions about the running back position.
It looked good, and they should keep doing it. It was an excellent, excellent game plan.
Yeah.
Every time I say it, I'm just like, why?
Yeah, I mean...
Why the open people, no throw to...
Yeah, I mean, that's... I think the thing that gets people about a lot of these Ohio State games, it's always like one very obvious piece away. And, you know.
Right.
And it's like everything else could have fallen into place, but then like.
And does Michigan win this game with Wilton Spate? Does Michigan win this game with Brandon Peters?
Mm-hmm.
I think the answer to both of those questions is yes.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
Yes, it sure does. Yeah. don't necessarily know what to add to that other than that it sucks.
I can say something about John Runyon, who played right tackle for most of the second half.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an amazing full circle trip we've been on here. Cause
it sure has.
Like, he was the favorite through the end of spring camp. He started as a right tackle in the spring game. He
was holding on to it for much of the fall, too.
Right, and then suddenly the last week before the season, it's Nolan Elizio, and he's not very good. And then they move to Juwan Bushel-Beatty. Bushel-Beatty
is an upgrade over Elizio.
He's like a solid half season, but he was pretty bad against Wisconsin.
Yeah, and pass protection for him is obviously a continuing issue.
Right, and I don't know exactly what got him pulled for Runyon, but he was out there being the right tackle again, and just like, that's a pretty good summary of the offensive line this year.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing is that Mike Onwenu seems like completely healthy, ready to go, and they're still playing Cesar Ruiz. So I don't know if that says anything bad about Onwenu or if it says something.
Maybe it's just that they realize, like, you know, might as well groom Ruiz for the starting. Like, if there's not that much of a difference and Ruiz is going to be the starting center, like, Onwenu does have his, like, half season of starting under his belt and maybe get Ruiz, like, close to that. But
I don't know.
If they're close, and they do seem like they're pretty close as players right now. Like, they're both mashers in the run game.
Yeah. I mean, Ruiz only had the one pass protection mistake.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't come up. I didn't notice anything obvious from Ruiz. You know, obviously, I haven't rewatched, believe it or not. But
I'm shocked.
Yeah, I barely even watched more football yesterday after that.
Yeah, the only reason I watched it is my brother was over. He's like, let's turn on the Iron Bowl. And I was like,
I watched the Iron Bowl. And then after that, I was like, yeah, I'm done.
I'd rather jump into a pile of rocks. That's not a very good threat at all. Jumping into a pile of rocks is something people do all the time. It's called sand. It's a beach. Anyway, I just wrote down more and more boggling. What was his stat line?
17 for 32, 195 yards, one touchdown, one interception, five sacks taken. When you adjust it for the sack yardage, it comes out to like 4.1 yards an attempt.
And like many of those yards were like screens to Evans and Crawford.
So. Yeah, and a lot of those, like, those five sacks go for negative 43 yards because O'Korn is dropping so far back and holding onto the ball for so long.
They were so bad. One of them was they were just trying to get play action to Hill in the flat, and Hill apparently got held, and Harbaugh was kind of losing his mind on the sideline because Michigan had just gotten a holding call on, I think, Kalik Hudson on defense, and it was pretty obvious, and so Hill wasn't open, but, okay, throw the ball away instead of taking a 10-yard sack because on the next play they get 10 yards. So...
Yeah, like, you know, you call a rollout pass and your first two options aren't there. Just get rid of it. Just chuck it out of bounds.
Also, if they are there.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. You know, all right. So
throw the damn ball.
I don't think we can continue on in this vein without just bashing on a guy who I think everybody knows what the problem was. On Saturday.
Including him.
So let's take a break, come back, talk about the defense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up, and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
The sun and the air, all the shyness that is criminally vulgar. I am son and heir of nothing in particular. You shut your mouth, how can you say I go about things the wrong way?
So defense, you know, I think I predicted this in my game preview, is that they would
hold on and hold on until there was no hope left.
Valiant effort followed by a little bit of a late fade because all the spirit had gone out of them, and that was more or less what happened, especially on the last drive where to put up the 31.
Yeah.
But they start off on fire. They get through the third quarter, and I think in the first quarter, and Ohio State has negative yards.
Yeah, negative six in the first quarter.
And, you know, you see Hudson kind of flashing off the edge to beat a couple guys for an awesome tackle for loss. Mm-hmm. You see Gary paying off some sacks that he's been shorted all year.
Yes.
And one of them, Bush forced a sack for Gary. And that was just like, all right.
Justice.
Justice. And the defense seems rampant. And then Ohio State gets a few things based on, I think they were targeting Winovich in the run game.
Mm-hmm.
So they're running a bunch of QB power. And Winovich had to hold up, and he couldn't do that against a guy who's bigger and stronger than him. And that was their first, like, real opportunity to move the ball. They do that a little bit more on their second touchdown drive, and then Hudson busts on an RPO where he's supposed to carry the tight end. He doesn't,
yeah.
And that's why that guy is so wide open. And you get kind of a back and forth at that point where Ohio State is off the mat and they're able to move the ball a little bit. But, you know, Michigan holds them to just one more touchdown.
Yeah.
Until I think the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Until the last 2 minutes.
Right. I mean, this isn't, this isn't a Big Ten team, even though it is one. So like you're going to get some yards put on your face.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, this is 350 yards.
A lot of those coming late.
And if Michigan is able to have an offense that's on the field for any appreciable amount of time, you're stripping a couple of drives off of Ohio State, and you're looking at, you know, 20 points and under 300 yards. I thought this was about as as much as you could expect from Michigan, especially once some injuries started hitting. Like Gary went out for a period of time because he's still not right because he's had a shoulder thing his whole year.
And Ohio State started going at right at Carlo Kemp when that happens too.
Yeah, and that was another reason that they were able to get a chunk of one of their touchdown drives. And then the one thing that did kind of grate on me is that there were a ton of scrambles based on broken pockets, and people were talking about, oh, that's holding on Hurst and that kind of stuff. I didn't think it was. I thought it was just Hurst not quite getting around a guy, and then their dude is shoving from the side. That seemed legal to me, and then Hurst would not quite get a sack, and there wouldn't be anyone to clean up, and then they'd get like 15 or 30 yards. They scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
They got it down to the two. So
yeah, Michigan was in a little bit of a bind because you're kind of put in the position of, do you run more zone than you usually do? And they tried some of that, and then you get sometimes the situation like Hudson not carrying his guy down the seam.
Yeah.
Or you play man, and then all your back seven have their backs turned to the quarterback.
Yeah.
It's good to have a mobile quarterback for that reason.
Yeah, and then the other thing that was a little bit alarming is that, the only thing that their backup quarterback Haskins did when he came in late was hit like a couple of drag routes against Metellus that were wide open, and like wide open to the point where Metellus couldn't even tackle.
Yeah.
Like those are that, like, it's one thing to give up a 6 or 7 yard completion and then tackle immediately. It's entirely another when you're in man coverage and that guy gets to run after the catch.
Yeah. KJ Hill had like a 29 yard drag route.
Right. And that didn't seem to be anything except, Metellus not being able to cover that. At some point, I got to wonder, like, okay, you have three good cornerbacks, and is Metellus's run defense that much of an upgrade over LeVert Hill at that spot if all he's going to do is be in man coverage over a slot receiver?
Yeah, and Hill's run defense has actually been pretty excellent.
Right, yeah. So, like, if that's his role, it probably takes away some flexibility in your defense if they aren't running trips, but then you don't have that out there. I just wonder, at what point do you look at running three cornerbacks and one safety if you're playing a spread offense and you have this personnel, especially after Cannell goes out because you're playing Jamarik Woods, and then Jamarik Wood goes out
because he just whacks somebody immediately.
Yeah, that was like that was J.K. Dobbins, and he burst through the line. It was like 6 yards downfield with a full head of steam, and Woods just stands him up.
Yeah, no, he can really. He's made some very impactful hits in the short time he's been on the field this year.
That must be why they call him Woods.
Apparently, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Old Woods.
Old Woods. Well, he looks like a guy who...
he could be a player.
He's a player. I guess not. You're not going to see a whole lot of him next year because both safeties come back. But the year after, you got to think that he's the leading candidate to replace Tyree Cannell.
Yeah.
Especially because he just did that. And nothing bad happened. Like, nothing bad happened that was Woods' fault.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting that to, be part of the bloody-minded universe's way of Michigan losing that game, and that was not how it worked out.
No. Although, I guess he wasn't in it for that long.
That's true.
But nothing bad happened that was Jordan Glasgow's problem, I don't think, either. So.
No. I didn't notice anything. And usually if you see like a giant mane of hair running after a play, that's his fault. Like you can pick that out.
Like, oh, Kenny G must have screwed up. Vengeful
old,
Kenny G.
Old Kenny G.
Well, I think that's all I have to say. There was a thread on the board about like, yeah, O'Corn, but let's not forget about the defense. And That was
not a good thread.
No, I pulled that thread.
Yeah.
If anyone's looking for an explanation
as to why that's no longer there,
other than duh. All right, we're gonna take a break. Come back and talk about something else, I guess.
Unacceptable.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Why is it so hard to make it in America? I tried so hard to make it in America, a land of milk and honey, a land supposed to be built with love. It takes love.
So I've been informed by Dave that I am not supposed to literally read the Lantana read, which is very disappointing, but Dave is very, very stern about this.
I say you go for it anyway.
No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
Dave
was very stern, and Dave's had a bad day. The yellow lentil is topped with sunflower seeds and apricots. Don't shake your head.
No, I'm going to continue shaking my head, you Brit.
apricots, they're both correct. We looked it up on Wikipedia.
I know we did. You used the British pronunciation.
Well, I'm classy. So this
Such hump, a lie.
you, I am your employer. It's topped with both apricots and apricots. Is that did I just pronounce it the same way? Twice?
No. You used both.
Okay, good. And it has a bit of a kick. Seth says it's the best one to cook with. At our tailgate yesterday, people were putting the yellow lentil hummus on a flour tortilla with the brisket that Scratch Barbecue made. Wait, I wasn't supposed to
literally
read
it.
I read it.
Nice.
Oh, God. This has been like a triumphant moment for you. Check out all their flavors at LantanaFoods.com and find Lantana hummus at Bush's, Kroger, Meyer, or check your local grocer.
Very professional podcast.
Oh, that was awful. Like, I got turned into a corn cob twice.
Yeah, sorry. I totally derailed
Lantana that. Lantana Reed.
And David just gave me a fist bump for doing so.
I am surrounded by enemies.
Hey, man, you call somebody the Brady Hogan podcasting enough times. And
I feel like an aging Stalin.
the people around you are slowly turning against you?
Yes.
Or maybe you just start thinking that.
Yes.
You might have become a little paranoid as time has gone on.
This is another way in which our podcast is soft on genocide. We're just like, oh yeah, I'm Stalinette.
Yeah, there we are.
We should have had our banner.
The MGO podcast, soft on genocide.
Soft on genocide.
You can order up another one.
Sometimes I want to...
I'm sure one of our sponsors will be willing to put up the money for that.
Sometimes I want...
Stick your logo in the corner.
Sometimes I want
to... Soft on genocide, brought to you by Homesure Lending.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, Matt. Like, I take it back immediately.
Okay, so now you are literally trying to sabotage our podcast from within.
I am.
So the whole Stalin thing is
no longer even the worst thing that's happening in this podcast.
Sometimes I think we should run for political office just to see what the opposition research comes up with.
Well, for me, I have a pretty good idea, to be honest. And it's not great.
Yeah, I've had 10 years of writing about Michigan football on the internet. Wow.
Well, they'd just be like, yeah, don't vote for the nipple guy. And I'd be like, well, you got me.
Yeah, maybe there's a nipple constituency out there. I know there's a nipple constituency out there.
Apparently there is a Dominix, so.
What?
That's where the nipple incident happened.
Oh, right. Yes. I'm sorry. I don't remember locations very well.
I mean, you weren't there. It's understandable.
Yeah. It wasn't a moment in my life just seared into my consciousness.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you can't tell already, this was going to be kind of a state of the program overview segment.
Yeah. We're diving into that one head first.
Well,
right now.
I mean, you know, I think you see the big crater from the late Hoke recruiting and the transition class that was a necessary cost of getting Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the senior class this year and the redshirt juniors, and you try to pick out the number of impact guys, it's not a long list.
Okay, what is the list?
So in the senior class, it's John O'Korn,
right,
at quarterback, Ty Isaac at running back, who's not, I mean, he's been hurt for a decent chunk of this year.
And he was always just kind of a guy when he was healthy.
Yeah, Poggi and Hill at fullback, who will be losses at the fullback position, but Ben Mason looks like he'll fill that pretty nicely. Mason Cole, obviously a loss. Patrick Kugler should be replaced. Mo Hurst, a loss. And Mike McRae. And that's it. There are eight seniors. There are eight scholarship seniors on this roster.
That is
insane.
Bonkers.
Yeah. And then you go and look at the redshirt juniors, and it's Wilton Spate, Jared Wangler, Mo Ways, Ian Bunting, Juwan Bushel-Beatty, Lawrence Marshall, Brian Monet, Chase Winovich, Noah Furbush, and Brandon Watson.
So that's like one and a half starters.
Like, yeah, I mean, you got Winovich and Furbush.
Watson, so two starters.
And Watson, and then you got JBB on the offensive line, even though that was clearly not their first choice.
Two and a third starters.
And I guess Spate was the starter to start the year.
Right,
so.
Yeah. So you're looking at a desolation among the upperclassmen. And whenever I bring this up, there's always some guy like, why do you always talk about Hoke? And I'm like, who do you think is responsible for the upper half of this roster?
Yeah, I mean, Jim Harbaugh couldn't recruit 2 years in advance. That's not how it works.
The reason that O'Korn was starting at quarterback is that Michigan took Shane Morris and nobody in a two-year period.
Yeah.
And I don't know how any coach on earth decides to go with zero quarterbacks in a recruiting class.
Yeah, especially since anybody who saw Shane Morris play in high school knew that he was a high-risk prospect.
Right, especially because he didn't even play most of his senior year.
Yeah, and he was a guy who, like, you know, cannon of an arm and accuracy issues, and that's something that you're going to have to coach that guy up, and there's no guarantee it's going to work out.
Right, so, I mean, you see with Harbaugh, Harbaugh's taken at least one quarterback every year. He took a couple of transfers.
Yeah.
He's got two in this class.
Yeah.
So, like, this shouldn't ever happen again, just having a non-D1 level quarterback on the roster.
Yeah.
Even at like a third stringer.
Yeah, and I mean, they almost were able to push through it this year with a Borges recruit and a redshirt freshman, but both of them got hurt.
Yes. Yes. And so you look at the defense, and all you lose is McCray and Hurst, and Hurst is going to be
a loss.
You know, Hurst might be the best defensive lineman in the MGoBlog era. It's either him or
Brandon Graham.
Brandon Graham. And he's going to have a very long and productive NFL career. I mean, the nice thing is you got to see Aubrey Solomon kind of pushing through and establishing himself as a true freshman.
Yes.
You know, Brian Monet was a little bit disappointing, but you know, I think they'll be okay there.
I think you got Solomon, you got Dwan Four.
Yeah, someone will come through and be a solid player, and then you're hoping that you can hit a roll critical hit on one of them.
Yeah, and they'll at least have, you know, they piled in some DTs in the last couple classes to the point where they were comfortable flipping James Hudson to offensive tackles. So, which, you know, may have also had something to do with the issues on that side of the ball.
Yes.
But
and who's super grateful for that flip right now? This guy.
Yeah, yeah. Not alone there.
I was like, when that happened, I was like, oh, I liked him as a defensive player. That's stupid. And now I'm like, yes, thank you.
Yeah. So, but they still got, you know, Darren Irving Bay's in there. Donovan Jeter's in there.
Yeah, and they really liked Jeter. And Jeter ended up out for the season with some sort of injury. So he'll be a redshirt freshman, and I think you're going to see him move into the rotation.
Yeah.
They should be deeper. Like this year, you didn't really have very much behind the starters.
Yeah, it took them a while to even develop some functional depth at all beyond Carlo Kemp.
And
some snaps.
And Kemp is not on the level of like a Chase Winovich from last year.
Yeah, it's not like you're putting somebody in and there's no drop off.
Right. So, but hopefully another year of development for him. We'll see him become less of an obvious spot to attack when Gary is out. Give him the opportunity to give Gary a breather. I mean, you saw a little bit of Marshall. You saw a little bit of Dwan Four as the season went on, and that's probably a good sign.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think
there's not really. I mean, you lose Hurst, and that sucks. But unless Chase Winovich goes pro early, which apparently he is pondering.
He said something. I mean, he kind of seems like a guy who wants to come back because it's fun to be in college. Like,
yeah.
Kind of gives off that, like, Mitch McGarry vibe where it's like, this is awesome. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll
see.
So,
yeah, I'm hopeful there. Because otherwise there wasn't really a backup weak side end this year. It was just Winovich being an Iron Man.
Yeah, and then you saw a little bit of Paye late, and I think Winovich got knocked out briefly. And it was,
yeah.
And he looked fine.
Well, and he got pulled for that dumb penalty against Penn State.
Yes, that's right. And then you've got Luigi Villain, who redshirted this year because he had an injury, one of those injuries where it's like costs you 5 or 6 weeks and you're a freshman. So it's just like, hey, let's redshirt you.
Yeah.
So they'll have enough in the way of backup bullets to expect that they'll not only have a good starting line, but could approach the depth that they had last year.
Yeah, and they've got enough bullets in the chamber where you don't know whether one of those guys might break out and be like a really good player too.
Yeah, so someone breaking through is a real possibility, and then even if they don't, you're looking at two star defensive ends probably.
Yeah,
and solid tackles and solid tackle depth. Then the linebacker level, you lose McCray. Blessing and curse. He's a very burly dude. Never really excelled in space.
No.
But a captain and a leader on the team. Good player. Probably a mid-round NFL draft pick. And then it does. This is a spot where I'm a little bit concerned because you've got the three freshmen who came in this year, who we really didn't see much of at all. We saw a little bit of Josh Ross. The other two guys redshirted.
Yeah, although there were very understandable reasons for both of those redshirts. I mean, Jordan Anthony played running back for half of his high school career
as
a linebacker. Drew Singleton was coming off an ACL injury.
Both true.
Yeah. It also means that, you know, you're behind the eight ball a little bit in your first year.
It's not necessarily you're behind the eight ball, but you'd prefer to see something like what we saw from Solomon, right, where a guy kind of emerges.
Yeah.
You're pretty confident that someone will be able to step into that spot. And the only linebacker who kind of made that transition from a bench player to a contributor is Josh Uche. And while he's super explosive, I don't know if he's like a fit as an inside linebacker.
We did see a little bit of Devin Gill early on in the season against Florida, and he looked all right. I don't know how that's going to last, but because that didn't continue.
And then your other option there is moving Noah Furbush from sort of a 3-3-5 specialist linebacker into the McCray role when you have a 4-2-5 out there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they do have some options. Obviously, another year of Bush is going to be excellent.
Yeah.
And he can improve. There were a number of plays that he got lost on this year, but as he goes forward, those should be less frequent.
We saw prodigious potential from him. I think I'm really not that concerned between the three freshmen from this year. I think one of those guys is going to be able to step in and be pretty good, and that's if they are able to pass the guys a year in front of them. Singleton was absurdly talented in high school. I don't think that an ACL injury is going to wipe that out. Anthony showed a lot of potential, and Ross is probably the guy who's most similar to McCray.
Yeah.
So if they want more of a thumper, and Ross has a little bit more athletic upside, I think. So you'll probably have a downgrade in terms of, you know, getting all the assignments right. But
Bush should be able to pick up that kind of slack, I think.
Yeah. You'll probably have an athletic upgrade there.
Yeah. The nice thing there is you have 4, 5, 6 bullets at that spot.
So. Yeah. And you just need one guy to break through, really.
And then Hudson comes back at the Viper spot, came on late in the year. And boy, am I glad he did that, because we've been hyping him up nonstop.
Yeah. Wasn't going to look great if he was not an impact player.
But he is, and not just because Minnesota decided not to block him for a full game.
That did help.
The TFL we talked about early in the game was a super explosive Khalik Hudson / Jabril Peppers play.
Yeah, because he's shedding a block in the backfield where that whole play is contingent on him getting wiped out, and he manages to defeat it anyway.
Yeah.
And still make the tackle.
I mean, he had the bust on the tight end, but like later they came back to that same play and he carried it down the
seam. He's all over it, yeah.
Yeah, and he's
And that's a defense that Michigan has not played much this year. So it is, I mean,
they run trap a lot.
Yeah.
But the kind of thing I'm getting at is he has the athletic ability to carry Marcus Ball down the seam, and Marcus Ball, while extraordinarily inconsistent, is one of the most athletic tight ends in the country.
Yeah.
I think before the season I said he would be approximately equal to Jabril Peppers.
Yeah.
And not too far off, right?
In terms of impact on the defense, yeah. I mean, there was not a significant drop-off there.
And he had an interception. Wow.
Hey.
Oh, God, we forgot to talk about that on the defense. The Metellus dropped interception. Well, now we talked about it.
Okay, yeah, now
we talked about it.
Yeah, we're done.
And the secondary looks like to be in great shape. You've got the three cornerbacks who all look very good.
Yeah.
Coming back. You have Ambry Thomas rising to sophomore status.
Yeah, and once he fills out a little bit, I bet he's an impact player. Because this year he was just like a little bit too skinny to be out there on defense a lot of plays.
Yeah.
But he is crazy talented.
And then you get both safeties back, and those guys had ups and downs. I thought Metellus had a really strong finish to the season. I don't know if that's going to hold up through this game. It probably won't.
He had some rough moments. He had a really bad angle on a run play. There were some rough moments in this one.
But prior to that, I thought he was excellent down the stretch.
Yes.
And Cannell missed a lot of tackles, but didn't bust a lot of coverages, was pretty solid as a man defender. Like, at worst, those guys are B-plus players.
Yeah, and you've got Jamarc Woods behind them, who got some playing experience this year.
Seem to really like him.
Yeah, and they seem to really like Jalen Kelly Powell, too. I mean, they were kind of finding a spot for him earlier this year, but they did end up putting him out on the field against Wisconsin, which means they have to – that didn't go great.
No.
But they were confident enough in him to put him in there when there were other options. And he's another guy who – I mean, he fits this defense really well in that he is – kind of a safety and has cornerback coverage skills.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the takeaway for the defense next year is they won't have Mo Hurst.
Yeah.
But you're approaching kind of like Alabama-ish levels of depth here. So, like, the secondary looks completely loaded. They need one or two guys to break out maybe a little bit above their recruiting rankings in the front seven. But they have a lot of options to do that.
Yeah, I mean, because you're looking at who you want to break through, and, you know, Solomon's a 5-star. Jeter and Irving Bay were 4-star. You know, Army All-American types. Luigi Villain was on the verge of being a five-star. All of the linebackers were
high four stars.
And Singleton, I still believe, would have been a five-star if he didn't tear his ACL. Ambry Thomas was top 100.
Yeah.
Benjamin St. Juste was a Canadian All-American, which is like, that doesn't happen.
For ontological reasons,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, you know, it's part of America.
That's
writ
true.
Large.
Yeah, writ large.
And you got Kelly Powell and Brad Hawkins at safety. I mean, that and Woods, who actually got on the field before those guys, and those were four-star recruits. I mean, that's...
I mean, safety is really the only spot where you don't have, like, blue chippers.
Yeah, yeah, that's... And, I mean, a three-star has already broken through and looked like he could be a player.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you look at the backups across the board and... You start attaching star rankings to him, and it's like, yeah, this is looking pretty good.
So, I mean, this should be a defense that's about on par with this year. Possibly they get back to last year's near total dominance.
That'd be nice.
On the other side of the ball, less.
They bring back a lot.
Do they?
I mean,
they bring back some.
Yeah, I mean, they bring back a lot of the depth.
Yeah.
And, well, first of all, like, one of the biggest problems this year was that receiver. And all of those guys had a year of experience. You get Tariq Black back.
Yeah.
That's going to be rather important. And then you get, like, you know, we barely saw Nico Collins. We didn't see Oliver Martin at all. Those guys are going to be impact players at some point. I wouldn't be surprised if it's next year.
Well, you get all the tight ends back.
You get all the tight ends back. You get all the quarterbacks back who aren't John O'Korn.
Maybe Wilton Spate. Doesn't get back for yeah, whatever reason.
But, you know, and if he doesn't come back, that probably says a lot about Peters.
who will never play here, says person on the internet.
and McCaffrey also, I mean.
You get McCaffrey off the red shirt, so he's an option.
So quarterback should be if fine. But, running back, you know, everybody but Isaac.
Yeah, I mean, Evans and Higdon is a 1-2 punch that I don't think many teams will be able to beat.
Yeah, and Harbaugh is clearly quite excited about Ben Mason to the point that he starts breaking out three fullback formations at the end of this year that work.
Yeah, I mean, Mason looked at least competent that as a true freshman. I think he'll be an asset going forward. But, you know, the big question mark is...
Offensive tackle.
I would say offensive line as a whole.
I think the interior is going to be fine. I hope
the interior is going to be fine.
You've got Ruiz at center. I'm very confident that he's going to be quite good.
Like immediately, though?
I mean, he was pretty darn good immediately. You know, there's one blown pass protection, and otherwise he has been moving people. And
he struggled against Wisconsin.
Like, yeah, sure.
That TJ yeah. Edwards was slashing inside of him a couple times.
True freshman against like a top five defense in the country and a 3-4 defense that he had not seen yet. I mean, there will be some growing pains, but considering that we were looking at the line and thinking that a lot of the problems were emanating from the center position already, I think he's going to be an upgrade.
I don't think it can be a downgrade.
Yeah, I mean, so and then you've got on.
I didn't mean it like that.
Yeah,
but
it was a trouble spot.
Yeah,
I mean, and Ruiz is tremendously talented. And we saw a decent amount of that carry over to the field already with him as a true freshman. And then you've got Onwenu and Bradison at the other two guard spots. That's looking pretty good to me.
I mean, Bradison was so bad in pass protection this year. And
I have to imagine a lot of that was just like, if you've got a center who's screwing up line calls routinely, then you're going to get some stuff that like looks bad out of context.
There were a number of just like one-on-one matchups that he got smoked on. And... I hear you about the line calls, but I think that Pro Football Focus has him pretty low as a pass blocker and like
sure. I mean, he's also, you know, he's still just a true sophomore.
That's true.
Like, I mean, that's the thing is these guys got thrown into the fire early, and
yeah, he should
offensive
have been a
linemen
freshman.
Like take big steps forward year to year. So I'm building that into when I'm trying to project next year's line, but then you know. Obviously, then you get to tackle, and you go, like, get well soon, Grant Newsom.
Yeah, you've got Grant Newsom. You've got the three guys who started at right tackle at various points during the year. I guess only two of them started. You got the two guys who started in Runyon. You have You have
Andrew Stuber, you have Chuck Filiaga, and you've got James Hudson, who just flipped over this year.
And Hall is hypothetically a guy who can play outside.
Yeah.
Joel Honigfurg. So yeah. You've got a lot of guys.
And, like, you know, Steven Spinellis could potentially be a right tackle.
I
think you can stretch him out there. Or you put him at guard and you kick Bredesen out.
If that hasn't happened already, does it feel like it's ever going to happen? Like, that's the thing that we were wondering about this year, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, quite frankly, I have no idea.
I mean, they have a lot of options. It feels like they're at least a year away from feeling confident in many of them.
Yeah.
Like, Stuber is a redshirt freshman. That kind of makes me pull my collar. As a redshirt sophomore, all right, that seems like we can work with that.
Yeah. I mean, you really hope that Newsom gets healthy. That's kind of where it's at. Because otherwise, you got question marks at both tackle spots. And even if Newsom's back, that's still a bit of a question mark because the guy hasn't played in 2 years.
Yes. So, kind of the original sin of the Harbaugh era was not picking up any tackles in their first real recruiting class.
Yeah, that was the not taking a quarterback after Shane Morris version.
Yeah, well, I mean, they screwed around with Swenson, and everybody was mad at Michigan for doing that. But in doing that, I think they kind of screwed around with themselves. Because if Swenson's not in that class, then you're more attractive to other tackles.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They're looking at your commitment list and going, there's a guy there.
And then they are blindsided by the Devery Hamilton decommit. Because, I mean, if you look at the redshirt freshman that Michigan had, if those guys were a year older, then, as I mentioned, that looks like a pretty solid bet that a couple of those guys are going to emerge into the quality players.
Yeah.
But since they're not, because Michigan didn't have any, not so much. And that is my main criticism of Drevno and Harbaugh so far, is that. But what are you going to do? Are you going to fire the guy? Are you going to tell him he shouldn't coach here? No, you're not. So these things have happened, and nobody's perfect. Jim Harbaugh is not perfect, and we're going to go forward, and hopefully he'll be pretty good.
Yeah.
Going forward.
Yeah.
Which seems likely, right?
Like, I mean, like, every piece of evidence in his career so far points in that direction.
Thank you. I forgive you for your total ponage of me during the Lantana segment. All right, we're going to talk to Jamie about something.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team. Yes!
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
There's a voice screaming in the haze. I let him in to the cold. No lies live in this town, you never know. While the fire sears our little faith, I'll get you all the way home. No lies live in this town, you never ever wanna grow. Oh, I'm living in the table lights, I guess I've drawn to know.
Welcome in, Jamie Mack, Just Cover Blog. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, just wrapping up another blowout weekend in the Big Ten. The average margin of victory was over 31 points yesterday.
Well, I don't feel bad for not watching a snap of any of these games.
Mm-hmm. No, me neither.
Good God. So
I think the only thing you missed actually was, believe it or not, in the Illinois game when an Illinois player picked up a flag and threw it at the referee.
Yes.
And oh, my God.
I want to say I stand with that Illinois player.
What happened to the
after another season of Big Ten refereeing? I stand with that Big Ten player.
Do we need any more explanation for why he did that than Big Ten refs exist?
No, I just want to know what happened to him. Like, did he get ejected?
Well, there was just a little scuffle going on between the Northwestern and Illinois players. So the refs, you know, threw a bunch of flags for misconduct. Okay. And Ben Odendingo, one of the linemen from Illinois, who wasn't even involved in the fracas, just picks up the flag and just whips it underhanded, and it just nails the ref, like, in the neck shoulder area. It was great. It was great.
Yeah, he was ejected, believe
okay.
it
yeah.
I'm with him, though. I'm on his team. I'm with him.
All right, so we're gonna go over the scores, and I'm going to try to guess which horribly lopsided blowout was which horribly lopsided blowout. So
okay.
Give it to me.
Okay, we're gonna start with probably the easiest one, 66-3.
Okay, that feels like Penn State, Maryland.
Yes.
Yep.
31-0.
Okay. That
was easy.
That was Wisconsin versus Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
40-7.
40-7. Michigan State Rutgers?
Yeah.
All
right. Mm-hmm. And then 42-7.
42-7. Was that the Illinois Northwestern game?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
And then the 56-14.
That involved Nebraska.
Yes.
So they're playing Iowa, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you got all of them because the only one left is the 31-24, the close game.
Yeah, the old Oaken bucket.
Yes.
Jamie, do you have anything to say about these various hilarious and embarrassing blowouts?
No. I don't have anything interesting to say about any of them. I mean,
fantastic.
Nebraska. Wow. Nebraska. I mean, and that was a couple days ago, so we don't want to review that game too much, but that's what stands out, again, of all these blowouts, is just how bad Nebraska is.
They gave up a defensive touchdown on the first play of the game, right?
I think it got overturned.
Oh.
Yeah, it got overturned.
Disappointing.
Yes, yeah. Well, it like
that was a highlight. That was a highlight for Nebraska.
I follow a bunch of Iowa bloggers, right? And the Iowa guys are all like, oh, our offense is so terrible. Our offense is so terrible. Our offense is so terrible. And then this game starts, and they're like, our offense is so terrible. But, oh, my God, this defense we're up against is just an abomination.
That's the fourth time in the last six games that Nebraska has given up more than 50 points.
guess who drafted two Nebraska safeties in draft again? This guy. So I assume that their problems are all up front. So IU loses the old Oaken Bucket for the first time in like 6 years or something?
Yeah, broke a four-game winning streak in the series.
So, yeah, that's not good for them because now they don't go to a bowl. They lose a bunch of guys off their team. They still have Mike DeBoard. Like, I mean, where is this program going?
I mean, I think it's going in the wrong direction. I think they're staring at maybe 3 or 4 wins next year. You know, they have to rebuild, you know, a defense that finally was kind of the first semblance of defense the program had in a generation. They haven't shown anything on offense now in 2 years. And their in-state program is going in completely the other direction. So, you know, the scales have tipped there.
Yeah. So Purdue,
they didn't do anything against Purdue until they were down 31-10. They had, 497 total yards, but 217 of them came in the final 7 minutes of the game. And like I said, they were just down 31-10 when that happened. So we talk about this all the time with Indiana. They run a ton of plays. They ran 92 plays yesterday, but they didn't really go anywhere with them until the end. But I want to say something really quickly about Purdue, because we've talked about them all year, but this is great for them. Not only do they get the old Oaken Bucket back, but they qualify for a bowl game. And their 4-5 Big Ten record, 4 Big Ten wins. They only had 3 in the prior 4 seasons under Hazel. So, I mean, just a good year. And we could stand here and make a case that they should have won 8 games this year because they lost somehow to Rutgers and Nebraska.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're one of the reasons there's only 10 conference rooms in this hotel.
Right. Yeah, right.
How did they lose to Nebraska?
I don't know. I mean, I can their defense just was not good in that game. Nebraska drove all day. You could make a case that Nebraska could have had a bigger margin. They won by 1 point, but they were constantly frittering away scoring opportunities. And Purdue's offense, as decent as it's looked under Brohm, they can be really clunky. They have a lot of issues with drop passes, and they dropped a lot of passes in that game.
Yeah, I mean they were running out some young kids on offense, and they were making it work. So
yeah, drop passes have been a problem for them all year. So
yeah.
They'll get humming once they have some guys who can hold on to the ball.
Unless Jeff Brohm flits off to some other job immediately.
Yeah.
We can see that. And I'm admittedly torn on that. The IU alum in me is like, yes, go anywhere. But we also need the Big Ten West to provide something other than Wisconsin. And if Brohm stays there, you know, for, you know, a whole recruiting cycle, I mean, you know, this could be a fun program. Maybe not a team that could win the West, but a team that could just, you know, spoil some things and just be something on somebody's schedule other than a walkover, which is what pretty much that whole division sometimes feels like.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have somebody over there who could at least hang with Wisconsin every once in a while.
Yeah, it's so annoying. Wisconsin, always.
Just the clearest path.
Just getting stuff all the time because they play nobody. Well. We thought we'd maybe extend the segment to more than 3 minutes by talking a little bit more national. So the Iron Bowl goes down, and so does Alabama, 26-14, which paves the way for an Auburn-Georgia SEC title game.
Yeah, play-in game to the playoff. Mm-hmm.
And you got Miami and Clemson. They have another play-in game.
Miami loses to Pitt. And it doesn't really impact them in any way whatsoever in terms of their playoff hopes. But it was funny.
No. And this is why a 6-team playoff would be much better.
Because then you have an
because Miami,
you want that bye.
Yeah, Miami looks like they're going from a first-round bye to actually having to play in the first round. And that's a huge difference instead of, like, I guess we're the road team in a bowl game.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't even matter.
Right.
Yeah, the 6-team playoff would definitely add a lot of intrigue to the conference championship game weekend that sometimes isn't there under the current format.
Right, especially because my ideal format has home games like any sane person says.
Of course. Bring those SEC teams up north. Let's make it happen.
You know, Matt Hinton on Twitter is the guy who has the clearest view of who's in and who's out in the playoff, and he's like, Alabama's got a 50-50 shot. They have a better shot than anybody. And he thinks that Ohio State is eliminated. He thinks that Notre Dame is eliminated.
Yeah.
He thinks that Alabama is
Notre Dame's definitely eliminated now.
Right, yeah, it's not. I mean, of course, yes. But
I just wanted to say that Notre Dame lost again.
But you got
I'm not upset you brought it up.
So you're looking at Oklahoma, you're looking at the SEC champ, you're looking at the ACC champ. And then team number 4 is Wisconsin if they win
or Alabama.
Or Alabama?
Yeah.
Is Alabama just like
I think it's got to be them.
Their schedule
aren't they in basically the same position Ohio State was in last year?
Sort of, but Ohio State
arguably one of the best teams in the league, but they're sitting out their conference championship game, but yet they still have strong hopes. And things happened enough for Ohio State to make it last year. So, I mean, I could definitely see Alabama as a 50-50 shot, even though they're not playing anymore.
So the difference is last year OSU had a win over Oklahoma.
Correct.
And this year Alabama has a win over Florida State. Which doesn't look as good as it's supposed to,
but they didn't get spanked.
Talk about not. That was supposed to carry that resume, and it just obviously never did.
So their best win right now is Mississippi State, which just got splattered in the Egg Bowl. So like, is that resume similar?
And,
go ahead.
Yeah, and their crossover games against the SEC East, which is about as bad as the Big Ten West, were Vanderbilt. And the worst ever Tennessee team.
Yeah, they do not have a strong schedule.
Like I don't feel like they really played that strong of an SEC schedule. I mean, I know that sounds hot takey, but.
But they also did. They also whooped on pretty much everybody they played except Mississippi State.
Because they were bad. Does whooped on really like count?
Yeah,
I mean, beating Ole Miss 66-3, that still says something.
Yeah, that says Ole Miss is on probation.
Yeah,
true.
I mean, is the Pac-12 just completely eliminated at this point? What's the championship? Is Stanford versus
USC at the real outside shot at getting it?
Are those both 3-loss teams already?
USC's got 2 losses.
Mm-hmm.
Have they beaten anybody?
Well, they've already beaten Stanford, the team they have to play again to win the Pac-12. They got hammered by Notre Dame. They lost to Washington State.
Yeah, the only other team that they beat that was ranked at the time was Arizona.
Yeah.
Ugh, man.
Arizona didn't close strong at all.
And
so.
USC also barely squeaked by UCLA, who then fired Jim Mora. So.
Yeah.
The Washington,
Washington State, Stanford round robin just gobbled that division up here in November, big time. And I really feel that league's out. I know that people are trying to squint and make USC a contender still, but it seems unlikely.
That was the other team that Hinton said was out, was USC. It wasn't Notre Dame. So, I mean, is it Wisconsin or Alabama for the last spot?
I think so.
You know, one other thing while we were comparing Ohio State's situation last year and Alabama's is that loss at Penn State was a classic game and maybe a little fluky since it was decided on a blocked field goal returned for a touchdown. Alabama last night just did not play well. You know, they were outclassed, I thought. Now, I didn't get a chance to really, sit down and watch every play, but it just felt like from the get-go, Auburn was the much better team. So, I mean, it felt like 9 out of 10 times maybe Ohio State would have won that game last year against Penn State, and maybe 3 out of 10 times Alabama would have won that game yesterday against Auburn. I'm making up percentages, but that's what you do in college football.
I mean, I think you're right.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if Auburn loses the SEC championship game, do they still have a better resume than Alabama, which did nothing and doesn't have a win over Alabama?
Yeah.
But they have 3 losses. I mean, you're just not going to be able to put them in.
Like, Alabama didn't play Georgia.
It's true. Yeah.
I kind of feel like I'd rather have 3-loss Auburn in than Alabama because you want to make that game count.
I mean, I wouldn't
want too many losses.
A rematch from that Clemson Auburn game earlier in the year. I feel like Auburn has kind of solved some of their protection issues, maybe, and they won't give up 11 sacks. But that was a 14-7 game, I think, in week 2 that could have gone either way. So.
Yeah, their losses are to what? Clemson, and then who's their second loss to?
They lost to LSU in a game that they were up 21-0.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oops.
But, I mean, we're talking about a team that even if they lose the SEC championship game has wins over Georgia and Alabama. I don't think anybody else on the planet can compete with that. even if they do have a bad loss to LSU, I'd rather put in the team that has a couple of big-time scalps.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing about the way the system is right now is that it's
LSU, but I think it's as fluky as the Ohio State loss last year, you know, because they had a big lead and they just frittered it away.
I mean, it's bad that, like, missing your conference title game is an advantage.
Right, that shouldn't help you.
I think 538's numbers have it at, like, Alabama's at, like, 90% to get in.
It's way higher
than anybody else because they're not going to get saddled with another loss.
I mean, I thought Penn State should have been in last year. Like, because, I mean, they beat Ohio State, they win the conference. Like, okay, they lost to Pitt earlier in the year, but, like, dude, what?
what's the point of settling on the field if it doesn't settle on the field?
When they walked off that field with the Big Ten trophy, they were undeniably one of the best teams in the country, the run they had been on, you know?
Yeah, and it feels like it's still just slotting by the number of losses, and they're not taking anything else into consideration.
I may have missed it while we're jumping from topic to topic. What happens if Georgia beats Auburn? Does Georgia get in?
Georgia's in.
SEC champions. Yeah.
That's just a playing game.
Yeah.
I think that where it gets interesting is if TCU beats Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game, because that might open up another spot. Because Oklahoma gets in. TCU, I don't know if they get in.
No. TCU, I don't think will. They've lost a couple here.
Including to Iowa State.
Yeah.
I mean, Iowa State's good-ish.
Yeah. But if you lose the... Yeah. And that would be avenging their other loss because they lost to Oklahoma.
Well, that's a good point, Ace. Yeah, a lot of teams here. Georgia can get in by avenging a loss. Maybe we're talking about TCU here possibly if they avenge their
It just takes a leap, though, because they're like 12th right now.
Yeah. I know, but beating Oklahoma is like, well, that's...
That's a resume maker.
That's a leaper.
Yeah. But is that enough to get them past, like, Ohio State and Alabama?
Probably not, because Ohio State also beat Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did not lose to them.
Champs, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, Ohio State's only path in is if Oklahoma loses and knocks himself out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Go soon, Pokes. That's not who they are. They're the Wallabies. The fighting Wallabies of Chester, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
We have some early lines on these championship games if you want to hear them.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's get them out there.
All right, well, Big Ten, Ohio State is favored by 6.5 over Wisconsin.
Okay.
The Big 12, Oklahoma is favored by 6.5 over TCU. Clemson is 6.5 over Miami. And Auburn is 3 over Georgia. Those lines will probably shift some, I'm certain, here, not just in the next 24 hours, but also later in the week. But
Given what I just saw from Ohio State, I kind of am surprised that Wisconsin isn't closer to a pick-em. Because Michigan had guys running open.
Yeah, but
that defense is nasty against the run. Like,
I wonder if that line is more intended for the public who thinks Wisconsin is a paper tiger.
It's Wisconsin, yeah.
Right.
I mean, Wisconsin
gets no respect, generally speaking, nationally, you know, and this line is all about, you know, getting people to bet one side. I guarantee you people are like, oh, hey, 58-0 2 years ago in this game, you know, which doesn't really mean anything, but just trying to explain why that line might be out there.
You know, given what I saw from Hornibrook and the number of open guys that Michigan was able to scheme with their man ball approach, like, I kind of think Wisconsin wins.
I'd like to see
this
Wisconsin defense, though, against the Ohio State offense. I mean, I think that's a good matchup, even though it didn't work out last time they played. But
I don't know. I think they're legit.
I think it depends on Barrett's knee.
Too.
Yeah,
I do too.
Whether any photographers look at it funny. I mean, you look at Wisconsin, you look at what they did to Michigan's rushing offense, and you look how, I mean, Michigan's rushing offense wasn't great against Ohio State, but it was much more functional. Like, I think they have a better defense. I think they have a quarterback who can hit someone once in a while.
It might be a guy on the other team, but...
I mean,
I mean,
Quinton Cephas being
Higdon and Evans combined for, what, six yards per carry almost yesterday?
Yeah.
You know, and Jonathan Taylor is just, I mean, he's a stud.
He's really good.
A stud. And they're physical. They've got that great fullback that blocks for him ahead of him, Ramesh. You know, I mean, I.
And they had problems with tight ends against Iowa, and they've got one of the best tight ends in the country.
Yeah.
Fumagalli
is an NFL prospect for sure. He's really good. He's been good for him for 2 years. He's really one of the more integral players in the league. If you look up, you know, Wisconsin, how many times he moves the chains on third down catches. It's crazy. He's really, really good. And, you know, in Michigan, he had a big third down catch.
I know.
Yeah, I know. But I mean that, you know, you're right. Iowa really roasted them with those tight ends earlier in the month.
Yeah, man, roasted. Hey, is Scott Frost going to land at Nebraska?
Oh wow, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of talk that Florida might get him, like, and I actually think he's a great fit for Florida.
I mean, he's in Florida now.
Yeah,
they like him.
Yeah,
it's a lot easier to recruit there than frickin' Nebraska.
Yeah, it was weird.
It was weird. There was talk. There was a report this weekend that Florida was going to talk to Frost somehow this weekend. And then also the Nebraska athletic director is like, oh, yeah, he's definitely on my list. I'm like, dude, you better hustle. You better get that going.
Start narrowing that list,
you know,
buddy.
It's like you're almost, well, you're watching the Nebraska AD on TV saying, yes, he's on my list. And on the scroll below, it's like, meeting with Ford, it's like, dude, what are you going to do?
Like, you shouldn't be on the TV right now. You need to be on a plane.
Right.
Yeah.
What if they get Bolima at Nebraska?
I mean,
I wouldn't hire him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I feel like he's.
I wouldn't hire him. I want that to happen.
Right. I'm. That's what I am.
I mean, the storylines exactly. There are pretty spectacular, but yeah. I just kind of think that he's past it.
The hate that would come from, like, the Iowa and Wisconsin fan bases who hated him when he was coaching at Wisconsin would be great. Great Twitter fodder.
Yeah, I mean, if he manages to get,
but I don't think it would move Nebraska forward at all.
You know, Iowa grad, Wisconsin coach, Nebraska coach is such an interesting path.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, that would be something.
They're in a weird Yeah, they're in a weird, weird spot, aren't they? I mean,
Nebraska?
Yeah, because like they're far enough away from, like, their heyday that it's not really a plum job anymore. And then you realize, like, man, it is so difficult to recruit there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they've got to get the perfect coach with the perfect system in there. Frost is probably that guy.
But he's
such a hot commodity, he could end up somewhere else, and it wouldn't surprise any of us.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you're objectively – if Scott Frost was not a Nebraska grad, you'd be like, they're not getting him.
That's correct.
Totally. Right.
You know what? There's a guy who's right for Nebraska. He's right for college football. No, not Bob Stitt. Ken Numiatalolo.
Yeah.
Navy's
head coach. Like,
also nice job on the pronunciation.
Was that correct?
Yeah.
Wow. That's never going to happen again.
No. Mm-hmm. Ride that one out. Don't even say his name ever again. Yeah, he's Navy coach from now on.
Navy coach Ken.
Yeah.
So, like, but, you know, football, college football is wrong when Nebraska doesn't have a running quarterback. You can't really recruit to Nebraska very well anymore.
No.
If you have a weird ass.
And they're not recruiting well right now. So if you bring in the Navy coach, it's not, you know, the biggest knock would be like, how can he recruit? You know, but it's like, they're not recruiting right now. So.
Yeah, if anything, you want somebody who's pretty used to having limitations.
Yeah. And he's a good coach.
Yeah.
Like, he's a legit coach, and I give it a shot.
Like, yeah.
At the very least, you're going to piss off everyone else in the Big Ten because they have to deal with the triple option every year.
Yeah,
oh, right on. And you know what? That's something we'd like to see, especially from a Big West team, you know, not in the Big Ten East.
Yes.
No, have those spoilers in the other division, please.
Yeah. And
that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Whoever the new Nebraska coach is, they have to reestablish recruiting in Texas, where they used to make a killing when they were in the Big 12. And the Navy coach is not going to go in there and get all 4 and 5 stars, but he can easily go into Texas and find the guys, the better athletes, to run, you know, the option that he wants. There's just obviously so many football players in that state. So, you know, I don't think it would be well received by the fan base necessarily, but I think that's a good idea. You guys have talked me into it.
Man, I don't know if it'd be that hard to sell Nebraska on, like, we're bringing the option back.
Yeah. Like, this
stuff that's a good point. I mean, I'm just looking at, like, what we're hiring the Navy coach, but, you know.
The other guy who I'd look at if I was Nebraska is Willie Fritz,
mm-hmm.
who was at Georgia Southern, and they had this weird ass, like, triple option pistol attack that was all run based, very effective. And he moved to Tulane, and Tulane has ramped it up this year, and they are just killing people with his system. So that's it's a more modern triple option, but it would fit the Nebraska profile. It'd fit their recruiting abilities. So he might be a little old, if I remember correctly.
Like, well, that didn't seem to be a problem for them the last time around.
Well, I think, you know, usually, you know,
you learn from mistakes.
Right. Mm-hmm. You date a girl and she's got red hair and the next girl has brown hair. So.
Sure.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. Is that not a thing? Do people not, like, go to...
I think it's more just, like, don't hire Mike Riley twice in a row.
Yeah, that's... Don't do that,
but,
yeah.
Yeah.
But you're right, Brian. Sports teams, professionally and college, do that all the time. You know, like, oh, what? We just fired a players coach? All right, bring in a disciplinarian. Wait, we just fired a disciplinarian? Time to bring in a players coach. I mean, that seems to be a common technique that sports teams do when they get rid of a coach. They sometimes try to find the exact opposite. Michigan kind of did that. Richard,
yes,
Brady Hoke.
They did. Mm-hmm. I was just going to bring that up. Guess what Michigan did? Could you find someone more different from Rich Rodriguez than Brady Hoke? Probably not.
It'd be tough.
Yeah. At least in the football coaching realm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no other like coach movement in the Big Ten this year. It's pretty much everybody's got their job and it's solid except for Nebraska, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless Illinois hits the dump button on Lovie Smith.
He's probably got too much of a buyout.
Yeah.
But. Yeah.
And that's not even an interesting like job search, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, they're going to go do something stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the East Division, other than Tom Allen, I think those other six coaches, I mean, are not just steady and solid, but I think they all did a decent job, this year. I mean, the Rutgers coach, Chris Ash, they, you know, despite some of these scores down in November, they were feistier, way feistier than last year and kind of interesting at times. And, you know, Maryland, I think that program is headed in the right direction as long as they can keep quarterbacks healthy.
Yeah, if they can hold on to one.
I think that's one thing. That's one of the things that separates that division from a lot of the other divisions in football is just the quality of coaches. 1 through 6 right now is really good.
Well, yeah, and then the East you have, I mean, Chris isn't going anywhere. Ferentz isn't going anywhere.
Right.
Fleck just got hired.
Fitzgerald isn't going anywhere.
I Kirk Ferentz, just kind of want to point this out. He made $2.4 million because of that win against Nebraska.
Oh my God!
The last several years of his contract are only half guaranteed. The money is only half guaranteed, but every time he has a 7-win season, one of those half guaranteed becomes a full guarantee. So his 2021 was half guaranteed, and now it's fully guaranteed.
Man, Kirk Ferentz's agent.
The big win for Kirk.
I don't know. It's either Kirk Ferentz's agent is the most brilliant man in the world, or
Gary
Bartas.
Totally.
A total jabroni.
Could be both.
Yeah.
We have some breaking coaching news that is somewhat relevant. Wolkins reporting that within the last 24 hours, Greg Schiano has emerged as the focus of Tennessee's search.
No way.
Is that where?
Tennessee.
That is a terrible idea.
Okay with it. Get him away from Ohio
Lane
State. Fine by me.
They're going to do that.
Could you repeat
that? If they're going to hire Schiano, they might as well just hire Lane Kiffin.
I honestly,
I think Kiffin's got more upside.
Honestly, like if I was at Tennessee and they told me that they'd hired Lane Kiffin, I'd be like, all right, like whatever. That's fine.
I know they're not because, you know, they got to do the opposite of which Jones and the offense he has, but I'd rather, if they're going to hire an Ohio State coordinator, I'd rather have them take Kevin Wilson.
Yes.
Same here.
That would be a much better idea.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing.
They're also, apparently Tennessee is also engaged with Dan Mullen, but Mullen is waiting out the Florida job. So Schiano might be a plan B there.
God, how does Mullen not get a job somewhere?
Every year he's like a top candidate. He's like the Gruden, but actually with a job, you know, every year.
And Dan actually Mullen's a good coaching somewhere. Candidate.
And actually good coach. Yeah, right.
I mean, this...
Boy, yeah, I mean, if I'm him and I get the chance, I got to get out of the SEC West, you know? I've got to.
Yeah, I mean, you have such a hard ceiling at Mississippi State.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And he's already hit it.
Yes.
Like he's just bumping up against it constantly.
Repeatedly with his head. And I don't understand how Florida didn't hire him instead of Nick Elwain, who was a rube from the start.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are we just going to do like 5 minutes of Jim McElwain bashing? Because I'm cool with it.
A rube from the start.
Yeah, that wasn't a great hire.
All right, I think we've droned on long enough about the national picture to sate the ravenous appetites of podcast listeners. Thank you for being on this season, Jamie. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, my pleasure too, guys. I enjoy talking about Big Ten football, and you guys are the two best people to talk to Big Ten football about. It's been another fun year, and hopefully Michigan next year gets to play their most important games with their QB1, and we'll probably have some better times.
Amen to that.
We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender along with Brian Cook. Thank you for listening along during this regular football season. We'll be back in a couple weeks with a basketball-focused podcast. Maybe a little bit of Ace's hockey podcast.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
A room from the start.